Well, we want to welcome you to this month's Dive Deep interview. This month, we have the opportunity to talk with Dr. Jennifer Degler. Jennifer, welcome.
Yep.
Thank you.
We're so glad you're here.
Well, I, as a form of introducing you, normally I just kind of speak an introduction off the top of my head, but the one that I found on your website was wonderful, and I decided I'm going to read it because I can't do it any more justice than the way this is written. So, to introduce Jennifer, psychologist, life coach, author, speaker, wife, and mom, Dr. Jennifer Degler is passionate about helping people create healthy, successful relationships. She lives in Kentucky and loves kayaking and hiking with her high school sweetheart husband, Jeff, as they enjoy their newly empty nest. Her fabulous and funny adult children, Josie and Jake, delight in telling their friends that their mom runs a sex shop, when in reality, she founded Sea Wives, a ministry to help Christian wives make their sex lives sizzle.
Cool.
There you go. Oh, you got to love your kids. No
I know it. I know it. I remember.
Has no honor in her own home. I could tell you that.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I remember when my book, Is There Really Sex After Kids, came out, and it came out while my daughter was in college. And so she and a friend went to a bookstore, you know, to look at it. And then they sent us pictures of them, like, you know, having the book open and reading it. And yeah, I didn't live that one down for a long time either. Mom, that's just wrong.
It's so gross.
Yeah.
Exactly. I love it. So, well, tell us just a little bit more about yourself, Jennifer, and what you're really passionate about.
I am really passionate about helping people create healthy, successful relationships. And a big part of that is helping Christian wives make their sex lives sizzle. That is the smoking hot part of Healthy Relationships RX, which is our ministry. But we also help couples with marriage. We help parents raise with advice for raising their children. We have personal growth resources, spiritual growth resources, just helping people in general have healthy, successful relationships. And I've just come to see that that's my real wealth in life. Is my relationships, and I want so much for other people to have those as well. So we offer a blog and podcast and products and whatnot to help people with their relationships.
So one of the things we like to do here at No More Perfect Date Night is we like to pull back the curtain on very real marriages. You may be an expert, but you're also married, I think, like 30 years, right?
Yes, that's right.
Jess and then
Yeah.
Your high school sweetheart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have known each other practically all of your life, you said.
Yes, we grew up together. I've never not known him. And I remember thinking as a child, he was really a terrible little kid. He always got in fights in children's church. But then I looked up when I was a teenager and he had turned into this great young man. So I chased him till he caught me.
Good.
I love that. Well, one of the things that, you know, we like to do though, is talk about what are the places that you have struggled in your marriage? When you think about your 30 years, I'm sure they've been just absolute bliss. And
yeah.
So let's talk about that bliss for a moment. Can you just identify maybe one or two areas that just seems like have been snags for you guys that you've really had to work through?
I'll tell you, our low point was after we had our first child. And for a lot of couples, that is a huge stressor, is adjusting to being parents. And we just, I thought reading a few books would prepare me. I was such a better parent before I had children. You know, I just knew it all. And then after we had kids, we were really struggling to figure out time management. And we had a lot of arguments because we both love to do a lot of different activities. And so now all of a sudden there's this child. And so I found myself at home a lot in the evening while Jeff was doing different activities. And I remember one night being so angry. I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to take Josie and go to a hotel. which was a terrible idea. And I called a good friend, and she said, I think you need to really think about that before you do that. That sends a really bad message. And I said, well, I just, you know, I don't know what else to do. And at this point, I was a practicing psychologist giving out marital advice. So in your own life, you can lose perspective. Even if you know the right thing to do, even if you're getting paid to tell other people what the right thing is, your emotions can overwhelm you. And so I was grateful to have her wise counsel to slow down. Mm. And I did. And that night when Jeff got home, we ended up, we stayed up for a long time and were very frank and honest with one another. And that was the start of some good conversations, some difficult conversations about what was it going to look like now that we weren't just Jeff and Jennifer. We were Jeff, Jennifer, and Josie. And we were going to have to adjust to being parents. And that really does mean there are changes. You have to start, you know, when you get married, you have to stop thinking like a single person and think like a married person. And then after you have children, now you have to think like a married person who has children, who's also a parent. And so it just took us a while to make that adjustment.
Mm.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So in your experiences as a psychologist and a life coach, you've identified a major difference between happy couples and unhappy couples. What is it that you've identified?
Well, that's such a great question. And it's actually based on the work of John Gottman, who is one of the foremost marriage researchers in America. And he was able to distinguish the masters of marriage from the disasters of marriage based on a number of factors. But one of the things he found that I think is fascinating is he looked at the difference between how much time happy couples spend together and how much time unhappy couples spend together. And what's the difference? And wouldn't you imagine that happy couples spend more time together?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you just had to pick a number out of the air in a given week, how many more hours would you think a happy couple would spend together?
Maybe 10.
20.
Yeah. You know what?
It would never be apart.
Yeah.
Five?
It's only five. Can you believe that? What's really, happy couples are not spending that much more time together than unhappy couples. It's what you do in that 5 hours that's really important.
Okay.
So that's what, this is the part of a marriage retreat presentation I do for couples called Time Together, just the two of us. Like, what can you do in the time that you have together that research shows it will dramatically improve your marriage in these, what we call the magic 5 hours. And so they're just some neat tips that I can give you for what to do in those 5 hours.
I love that. Well, I think we should just spend the rest of our time there. So let's jump right in. So how do we spend, if it only takes 5 hours a week, how do we spend those 5 hours?
Well, the first one is for partings. Okay. So when you and your spouse are going to part, like in the morning, one's going to work, one's going here. And it's not a lot of time, but take the time to find out something that's happening in your spouse's life that day. Maybe they have a doctor's appointment or they have a big meeting at work, but something that's going on in your spouse's life. Now, why would you want to know that? Mm. Why do you think you'd want to know that?
Well, because then
you're in touch with their day and
they feel seen.
Yeah. 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 And then at the end of the day, when you reunite, you can ask them, well, how did your doctor's visit go?
Mm-hmm.
How did your meeting go? This is very important because it communicates to your spouse, I'm making room in my head for you. You matter to me. Mm-hmm. And if you're not good at remembering these sorts of things, you can even just write it down on your phone. You can make it as a reminder so that when you pull back in your garage, you know how it'll do that with your GPS and the reminder will pop up on your phone and say, ask wife about her meeting today. And that just really helps people feel like, okay, you've made space for me in your head. So that's just 5 minutes a day. So that's, that's just 5 minutes of the magic 5 hours.
I love that. So Jennifer, you just talked about something that I think is really important for us to talk about. And that is that if my husband has to write it down, then there's something wrong with that. He doesn't really care about me. And so if he has to write it down, or if my wife has to write it down, then they really don't care. So talk about why that's actually okay.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. If something is important to me, I write it down. I love making lists. And so we tend to just, this shows our narcissism. Mm-hmm. Is that we think if you really love me, you would just magically remember everything about me.
All right.
Which is just so darling and sweet and precious of us, but it's an unrealistic expectation that we have, that we want to be so completely adored and known that everything, you know, that we would live in someone else's head as much as we live in our own head. And that's a, you know, nobody can do, only God can do that for you. So if your spouse writes it down, they have a much better chance of remembering it. And as well, over time, people usually don't always have to write these things down because they've trained themselves. Oh, and they just get in the habit. So initially your spouse may be writing these things down, but then you know, after a while, they may not have to because they're just in the habit of doing that. So
this is actually something I think we've done. We didn't know it was called partings.
Right.
But we've been much more in tune with our
schedules and
yeah.
What's your day look like? How?
Right. I would say that before our crisis, we weren't as good about that.
Right.
And so it was creating a sense of isolating in our relationship. And now we're more in tune with each other and what's going on in each other's day. So
yeah.
That's good.
You know, yeah. I like what you said about writing it down too, because I'll make a list through the day of things that I want to talk to Jill about, just because that helps remind me that, hey, here's what I want to talk about when we're together tonight. Otherwise, it's in my mind for a moment, and then it's fleeting. It's gone.
Absolutely. Yes, and what a great tool to use. So if you want, you can misinterpret that as being unimportant, that somebody had to write it down. But to me, you could also take that and interpret it correctly to mean, gosh, I really matter. They wrote it down.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Yep. And so that's partings. And you said, like, how many minutes a day is that?
That's just 5 minutes a day. So 5 minutes where you find out what he's got going on in his day, and he finds out what you've got going on your day. And then there's a, you know, a kiss, and boom. So that's just, you know, and really, yeah, really. And honestly, that's really more like 2 minutes a day. So that's like 10 minutes a week that you're doing that.
Very good. Okay.
And then the second one that's going to fill up those five magic hours is the reunion. At the end of the day, when you all come back together, and here, this is, I tell you, when I tell couples, if they can grab a hold of what I'm about to tell you about and put it in practice in their marriage, they will put me out of business as a marriage counselor. They'll save themselves a lot of time and money, and they don't have to come sit on my couch. And that is when they get back together at the end of their day, that they will have a stress-reducing conversation. And this is a 20 to 30-minute conversation that you have every day where you get a chance to help your spouse manage the stress of their day. And if you already have a daily catch-up conversation, but you're finding it actually increases your stress, then you're probably feeling like my spouse isn't listening to me during that time, or you're trying to talk about your marriage during that time. This is not a time to talk about your marriage. For most people, talking about their marriage increases their stress.
So what are you talking about?
So what you do is you talk about any subject outside of your marriage.
Okay.
Okay.
Anything. You can talk about I mean, hopefully you're sharing about your day. So you might be sharing, you know, if you've had a bad day, you whine about your day. If you've had a good day, you shine about your day. But you're sharing. And so, you know, and you take turns. So this one takes 10 minutes and this one takes 10 minutes and they're talking about their day, not trying to solve conflicts between the two of you. So it's an opportunity to emotionally support one another. You can talk about the job, your job, kids, in-laws, anything other than an ongoing conflict in your marriage, because that way you know I'm going to have this place of safety. I get to come home and experience my spouse as a safe place to fall. And that, you know, this is the most important human relationship you have. So make time for that 20 to 30 minute conversation. And what you'll find over time is that you really look forward to that. And you begin to really see your spouse again as your best friend.
Mm. That's powerful.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Okay. So we've got partings and then we have reunions. Now, how long is reunions?
So reunions, so that's about, you know, that's, well, can I give you a couple more tips about the reunions?
Yeah.
Okay. So if when you're having this stress reducing conversation, make your kids leave the room. That this is a time for adults, and it's important that the kids see that you two, that mom and dad existed before they existed, and they need to, mom and dad need to have some time, just two of them. Don't give unsolicited advice. Mm-hmm. This is not a time. This is a time just to listen and be there, not to solve your spouse's problems. You know, because if you're real quick to give advice and you're like, well, why don't you do blah 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 blah, it can make your spouse feel like, gosh, you're just kind of minimizing my problems. And so don't give advice, just listen and empathize. Oh man, that stinks. And if your spouse shares about something that you are just dying to say, I told you so, or whatever it might be, resist the temptation. Let me give you an example. Let's say your spouse says, I cannot believe, you know, I was 5 minutes late to work and my boss just chewed me out. Now you're inside, you're worried because your spouse, you know, kind of has a habit of oversleeping and running late. And so what you really want to say is, well, if you would get your butt out of bed, then your boss wouldn't have to chew you out. But you see, if you say that, it's not going to be a stress reducing conversation. But what you do in this sacred time is you just are like, oh, I hate that. Everybody runs late sometimes. Okay, so you were empathetic. Now, later at another time, you might bring up and address with your spouse, you know, I'm kind of worried because you're kind of developing, you know, you're really liking to hit that snooze button. And I'm kind of worried about what long-term that could do, you know, to your job reviews. But during this sacred space, just be on your spouse's side. And that will really go a long way towards just making your spouse feel like your best friend.
So, I love that. Yeah. Sacred space.
20 minutes a day. 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week. That's an hour and 40 minutes total.
Mm.
Okay. All right. So we've got almost a couple of hours here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So partings, reunions. What's the third one?
The third one is admiration and admiration and appreciation. So that every day you're finding some way to express genuine admiration and appreciation to your spouse. And that's just 5 minutes a day. And I tell people you need to do it 7 days a week. You don't get a day off from expressing admiration and affection. So that's 35 minutes a week. So right now I would like for you all to practice expressing admiration and affection.
Awesome.
Oh, well, we've been sitting here holding hands.
Very nice.
We do that a lot.
Some affection. And so admiration, goodness, mm-hmm. Mark, I love how you absolutely have such a gift and put up this wall this week of barn wood behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that you're so good about, getting those kind of things done. I appreciate that.
Wow. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I love how attentive you are to us, that you you manage a lot of things, but you also are attentive to us. That I feel as important as all those tasks that you have.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
How do we do?
Yay!
That was very good. Yeah.
And you didn't even prepare us for that. So.
Yeah.
No. That was totally off the cuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I only had a moment of stress.
Yeah, but just think about is if we're practicing that and we're just developing this habit of just if we see things we admire about our spouse and training our eye to see things and to comment on things that we admire about our spouse, it's interesting. The longer you do something well, the less likely you are to receive positive affirmation for it.
Mm. And because it becomes a little invisible or assumed. Yeah. And you know, the other thing that I would add to that, I am an internal processor. And so my tendency is I think those things, but sometimes they forget to exit my mouth.
Right.
And so I've really had to work hard at, you know, telling myself, no, I need to make sure. In fact, I've even done the list thing. Make sure I thank Mark for, like, because I've been out and about or running errands or I'm doing something else and he's not around. And I'll even put it on my calendar. Make sure I thank Mark for changing the locks on the door that we've talked about for forever or for listening to me last night when I was struggling with something. And so I think that I've really had to retrain myself. And I think I will probably always fight that to some extent because, like affirmation is one of my lower love languages and I'm an internal processor. So I just have to work a little harder at that.
Yeah. And good for you for being intentional and for seeing it'd be so easy for you to say, well, I'm not good at this. So he just needs to not need it anymore. But instead right. doing the hard work of marriage, which is looking to see where do we need to grow.
That's yeah.
Great.
Mm.
Yep.
Cool.
Good. All right. So we've got partings. We have reunions. We have affirmation, appreciation. What's number four?
Number four is affection. So prepare yourselves. I'm probably going to ask for a little PDA here in a minute. Okay. And this is just 5 minutes a day. Oh, yes. 5 minutes a day, and you don't get a day off from that either. So seven days a week. That's 35 minutes of the magic 5 hours. And I encourage couples, you know, when we're dating, we can hardly keep our hands off one another because we have dopamine and all of these neurotransmitters and all of this bonding hormone, oxytocin that's causing us to just touch one another. But then after, when we get into a long-term relationship, long-term marriage, we tend to stop kissing. It's interesting to see how married couples transit. They start doing air kissing. Now, from about that far apart across the room. So like this real lip locking doesn't ever really happen unless they're about to have sex. And in that at that point, it can begin to feel like, gosh, you only kiss me when you want to have sex with me. And there isn't really affection and physical touching unless, I mean, we're ready to take our clothes off and have sex. And so that begins to wither away that emotional connection and that spark in the marriage. I always encourage couples one last kiss before you go to sleep and let that be a forgiveness kiss. And in your head, just say to yourself, I forgive you. If there was anything your spouse did during the day that's just bothering you just a little bit, you know, like he was kind of breathing loud during the movie, so annoying, you know, or whatever it might be that you need to forgive them for, and that you just go ahead and do that, and just that last kiss is a forgiveness kiss, and hug. A lot of couples when they hug, it's very brief. I'm always encouraging my couples to hug for at least 30 seconds. Now, I'm not going to have you all do this, but for the couples that are watching, I would encourage you just pause the video and set a timer on your phone and hug for 30 seconds. It gets that oxytocin flowing. It gets that bonding hormone going. And it's a good thing. It's amazing how at the end of your day, if you will just add in a good long hug, your stress level will immediately go down, particularly guys, if you don't immediately start, like, you know, grabbing her body parts.
Darn it. There's always limitations.
I know. I know.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things we do in our No More Perfect Marriage events is we teach for about an hour. They go off and talk for about 40 minutes. But during that talk, after each one of them shares, they have to do actually a 1 minute full body hug. And we encourage them to just kind of fall into each other's arms.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how we lose our sensitivity to that. And you really have to be intentional about putting that back in.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that forgiveness kiss too. I just think that's a way to frame some intentionality to our intimacy.
Yeah, and to keep short accounts.
Yeah.
There are sometimes our spouse does things that we do need to confront, and we need to not just immediately, you know, give cheap forgiveness, but we actually, you know, they've actually wronged us. But if my husband is breathing too loud, he has not wronged me.
Right.
I just have probably been in a bad mood, and I just need to kind of forgive you know, for things that are just part of living with someone long term. There are things about them that can be that can be annoying. He just had a bad day, or she just had a bad day and was a little short, and to just go ahead and let that go. And hopefully some of that affection is going to turn into some real physical intimacy at some point, but certainly at least 5 minutes a day. And I encourage couples as well, this is something, I am not naturally a physically affectionate person. And so I remember when I had kids, I knew, okay, I need to touch them. Like intellectually, I knew that was good for them. You learn that in graduate school. And, so I thought, okay, here's what I'm going to do. Since I don't naturally feel this, like, ooh, I got to put my hands on everybody and love on them, I had this little rule for myself. If they were within arm's length of me, I would touch them. Like pat their hair or tickle them or rub their back or something like that, if they were within arm's length of me. And that wasn't really coming from my heart. It was coming from my head, but they didn't know. And then over time, it got this good feedback loop going. And now it comes, I'm a much more touchy person. It comes from my heart more. And so you can do that for your spouse as well. Just think, okay, if we're within arm's length of one another, we're sitting together in church, we're walking in the neighborhood, we're sitting near one another on the couch, just reach over, rub their back, you know, scratch their back, play with the back of their hair. I love when my husband will play with the back of my hair, not the front, because the front is done. Touch the front of my hair, but the back, you know, I like that back there. And so you can let your spouse know what kind of affection you would welcome, and then just be intentional about making that happen.
That's good.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about your comment about don't touch the front, touch the back. And I think a lot of times that's where sometimes we take a left turn, because some, like, our spouse will try something, like they'll try to be affectionate, and then it's not something that we like. And so we shut them down, and then they quickly throw their hands up and go, fine, I'm just not going to touch you. I think sometimes we really kind of undo that. And so I think in pushing that information to our spouse to say, I love when you touch the back of my hair.
Yeah.
I love that. But if you could not touch the front of my hair, and for them to be okay with that, they're giving those boundaries. Mm. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And I love, Jill, how you couched that with first saying, I love when you do this.
Mm.
And I would, but don't, I don't like it when you do that, but I love when you do that. And then you can bounce the question right back and say, what is it that you love when I do? And what would you prefer I not do? Now, I haven't thus far found anything that my husband doesn't like when it comes to touching him, you know, but, women can sometimes be a little more like cats, you know, we're a little more finicky about how we want to be touched or whatever, But I love that idea of, yes, definitely lead with what you like and how your spouse is pleasing you already, rather than leading with, you're doing it wrong again.
Right. No, I think that's really valuable.
Yeah.
And you know what? You're the finicky one. He doesn't like his feet rubbed. He doesn't like his back rubbed. He's like really, really picky about that. Yeah. Me, I'm like, just rub my body. I don't care.
No, that's great. You all are the opposite. So you're Jill, you're more like the dog and you're more like the cat.
Yes, yep. I am.
Very true. Yep. Okay, so I think we've covered four, right? We've got partings, we have reunions, we have appreciation and admiration, we have affection. What's last?
And finally, we're down to, and you all are going to love this, the weekly date. Yay!
Yep, love that, weekly date.
With a weekly date, which is 2 hours. And I tell you, you know, what does not constitute a date is important. I consider that a lot of times going to a movie is not a great date unless you go to dinner or get a cup of coffee. Why do you all think going to a movie and nothing else is usually not a great date?
Yeah. Cause you're sitting looking at a movie and you're not really interacting
with
each
other. You're not engaging and
exactly. Or going out with other people or going out with your children. It's not a great date because you're not really usually, you know, when I go out with another couple, the men sit in the front and the women sit in the back and we visit and that's fun. And I enjoy I love couple dates, but it's important that Jeff and I have some time every week. It's just the two of us.
Yeah.
And I find, you know, even if you've got little kids at home, that you can be creative to figure out ways to get to have a date. Now I know one of the things that Jeff and I would do, we really needed a cleaning lady because neither one of us liked to clean, and we felt like a cleaning lady was cheaper than a divorce attorney. We would take the money that we would normally spend on dates, and a lot of times we would pay our cleaning lady back. So Jeff and I would have a date at home. And I would cook dinner, feed the kids, put the kids to bed. And then he and I would have a dinner on real plates with real silverware. And I would actually fix my hair and put on makeup. And it was our date. And we would sit and we would talk. And so, I mean, that's the real purpose of a date, is to disconnect from the busyness of your life and to reconnect with one another. But I do encourage couples as well to get out of the house and to go and do some fun things together. But it's amazing how couples can come up with excuses for not doing that. Would you like to hear my list of excuses for not
doing that? Sure.
Let me just read this to you.
Are these things that you've actually heard in your practice?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Here we go. It's just too hard to find a babysitter. We don't know anyone who could babysit for us, and we don't know and have never seen anyone who could suggest trustworthy babysitters to us. We don't have any family in town, and we couldn't possibly entrust the care of our children to someone other than family for 2 hours. Heaven only knows what calamity would occur, thereby scarring our kids for life. And we can't afford a babysitter and a date, and we don't know and have never seen any couples with kids our age who might be interested in swapping babysitting. Plus, we don't think it's right for us to get to go out to dinner and leave our children behind. It would lower their self-esteem, and they might get the idea we don't love them and that they are not the center of the universe if we took time for two of us. And we wouldn't want that, now would we? And our kids are involved in so many activities. We've got 3 ball practices a week, 2 games a week, choir rehearsal, piano lessons. We are much too busy watching our children have fun, exciting lives to have time to have fun and exciting lives of our own. And going out on dates isn't that important anyway. I mean, we can eat at home and just watch TV while on the couch, just like we can eat in a restaurant and go to a show. What's the difference? After all, my parents only went on their anniversary and they're still married. Granted, they do spend most evenings asleep in their mats and lazy boys, but hey, at least they're not divorced.
Oh my goodness.
There's no excuse. I mean, there's just no excuse for not making a date work. I've heard them all.
Right.
It boils down to, are you going to be intentional and make that happen? Or are you just going to look up and your kids are driving and you all haven't been on a date since they were in diapers?
Yeah,
I agree. And, you know, I think here's the thing, you know, because we run into this occasionally with couples on No More Perfect Date Night. We'll get a cancellation notice and they'll say, you know, we're going to cancel our subscription because we can't find the time. And you know what? Nobody can find the time. You have to make the time.
Right.
I think that's the thing. And that's what I do love about, you know, the 2 hours a week. What we try to do is give couples at least, you know, about 30 minutes of that 2 hours. If they do No More Perfect Date Night together, they can do that and take another hour and a half out to go to dinner or go for a walk. I mean, a date doesn't have to cost money, does it?
Right. No, it doesn't. And as you know, when Jeff and I, our date technically didn't cost money other than just buying our groceries. It's about disconnecting from your regular day, your regular activities, and reconnecting with one another. So think about unplug from one thing and then plug into your spouse. And I use that whole idea of plug into because what couples don't realize is that date is going to energize them. It's going to energize their marriage. And so we hear that excuse, well, we can't find the time. We just can't find the time. In part because we're thinking, well, now we have to have a date. It's exhausting. Life, I don't have energy for that. But we need to get the thought in our head, I'm going to feel more energized after this. This is going to be a good thing for me personally and for my marriage and my family if I will make time for my spouse.
Wisdom.
Yeah, I do think it's important that couples take turns planning those dates. It's no fun if you're the spouse who always left being the planner and the one who finds the babysitter and the one who makes the reservations and comes up with the idea. So it's nice if couples will alternate doing that.
Yeah. That's good.
Yep.
Oh, Jennifer, this has been so good.
Yes.
Oh, yay.
Now let's see. I didn't do my math, but so I'm assuming that if you multiply all that out and you add that up, it adds up to 5 hours a week. Is that right?
It adds up to 5 hours a week. And this, once again, this is not me talking. This is actual longitudinal research where they've studied happy couples and unhappy couples, couples that stay together, couples that get divorced over really like a 20-year period. And this is what happy couples do.
Wow.
I love that.
Yeah.
So I think for all of us here at No More Perfect Date Night, I know every time we do a dive deep interview, we're challenged in our marriage.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'm thinking those, you know, pick one of them. Just start with one of those. And I think about, you know, partings or reunions. I think we, you know, maybe making those reunion conversations a safe, I love you said, I think a safe space or, you know, I think that there'll be some just, you know, start. Yeah. I think sometimes we can watch things and we can get overwhelmed. And if we can just say, no, just keep calm and choose one.
Start.
Yes. Yeah. And just add in, even if the thing that you're grabbing a hold of is, I'm just going to find something out every morning to ask my spouse what's going on in your day. And then when I get back with my spouse, I'm going to ask them, how did that go? That's huge right there. Just, and then you look up and you keep adding new skills and you realize, gosh, I'm married to my best friend and we get to have sex too. This is great.
Cool.
I love it.
Yep.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
This was so fun. Thank you all.
Well, this is Mark and Jill Savage, and we are so glad you've joined us. We're signing off with a reminder that a real marriage is not perfect. A real marriage is two people being perfected.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.